listening to the music that we played. She walked up and whispered, I leaned down and listened to the request that she made.
Do you know?
Do you know you are my sunshine? She asked so sweet and tenderly. One more time for me. Border to border and ocean to ocean, I still look for her every place. Chasing the sunshine each and every night, I'm searching every crowd for a face. She was gone just as quick as the song that she asked for, taking my sunshine away. But someday when I finally look down and see her, I know just what I'm gonna say.
Do you know?
Do you know you are my sunshine? Do you know what your smile did to me? Looks like you're always gonna be.
Do you know?
Do you know you are my sunshine? Do you know what your smile did to me?
Do you know?
Do you know you are my sunshine? And would you do it one more time for me?
Do you know?
Do you know you are my sunshine?
Here's your sign. Here's your sign.
The lights and the viper.
The Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream sat one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man, and I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge. Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and welcome to The Shooting Bench, the most radical, right-wing, conservative, no-holds-barred, information-packed, freedom-loving firearms information program on talk radio, beginning right now.
Die, fight, and you may die. Run, and you'll live, at least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
And welcome, January the 7th on a Thursday. Glad you guys could make it into the Shooting Bench tonight. We've got a few. We're going to kind of get off of the Oregon thing a little bit. We do have a few things we need to talk about concerning Oregon. But we'll get to that in a minute. But there's a few gun-related things. We've got some news articles. I need to try to catch up on some of this stuff. All the goings-on in Oregon has kind of kept us... got a bunch of other stuff piling up here, which is it's not a bad thing, because Oregon was much more important, and still is. It's just that we don't have as much to talk about tonight. Radio Doc, good to see you in. You're getting to be a regular fixture, brother. I'm glad to see you in here. D, we got, let's see what all's going on here. Yeah, we got, looks like we got just about the whole crowd here, the regulars. And a few of them not so regular. Roger, haven't seen you for a while. Welcome back. Tribute, you're getting to be a regular fixture. Viking, remember you from last night. Handful of anonymous there. All right. Good deal. All right. Let's go on here. First, I want to... there was a listener that got a hold of me earlier tonight. And, matter of fact, I need to wait just a minute because I'm not sure... Let me check and make sure. I'm not sure he's in the chat room here yet. No, I don't see him. So I'm going to hold off on that one for just a minute. All right, let's go to another one. Had another listener. He's wanting to, and this is an ongoing thing for all of us that hunt, all of us that have, type of... combat gear, stuff like that, vests and all that. We're just constantly searching for a way to carry more stuff comfortably in less room and not interfere with your rifles and not interfere with your drawing your bow back, not interfere with how you carry your handgun, not interfere with where your knife is. First one thing and then another. You want to carry it with your plate carrier, but you don't want to have to take your plate carrier off to get to your... get to whatever you've got attached to the Molly system on the back of it. So this goes on. This is as old as, 9mm 45 Ford Chevy, whatever. Just, everybody's got their own idea. And there ain't no point in arguing about it. If you like it, do it. You don't have to convince the whole world that yours is the best way. Yours is the best way for you. But I do have some suggestions for you to try if you're in the mode, in the mood for, if you're searching for something like that. And sometimes there's really no good answer, because sometimes you want to carry stuff for a long ways for a long time. You're going to be out for a few hours. You're going to be out for a few days. Rough terrain, hot weather. All of these things are... a factor in what you choose to carry. A big backpack with everything in it is not always the best choice. Yakima Glock cargo pants are not always the best choice. Agreed. Sometimes that works pretty well. But if you're doing a lot of climbing or anticipate doing any running, then having a bunch of crap in your cargo pockets, unless it's awfully light, some first aid gear or something like that, some dehydrated food, something like that, then that's okay. But other than, I prefer temporary things in my cargo pocket, something that I may need for a little while, something that I can get rid of quickly if I need to. It bothers me to death to have that stuff beaten against my legs all the time. And it's a very poor place to carry ammo or stuff like that. It's okay to carry, candy bars, granola bars, something like that. Like I said, dehydrated food or something. So, there's Trident and just popped in there. Good to see you, buddy. So, a suggestion here, especially if you're not going for days at a time, if you're looking for just a day pack or just for a patrol or something, and you've got your vest and you don't want to attach everything to the back because it's too much of a hassle to take off. It may be dangerous to take it off. Maybe you're not going to be in a place where it would be conducive to your safety to take that vest or that plate carrier. It's a little awkward to wear a vest on top of a plate carrier. So, you know, you just have to kind of figure out on your own how that's going to work for you. But I tell you, Maxpedition makes a very nice deal. They make two or three different sizes. I think it's called the, I think it's the VersaPack, I believe. And they make two or three different sizes of it. And they would have to say, yeah, it's a VersaPack. I've got two different ones of those, and they're built in such a way that they, kind of like a bandolier where you have a nice, wide, comfortable shoulder pouch that goes, strap that goes over, one shoulder. And so it's quickly removable. It's, you depend on what size you get, and you'll carry all the stuff that you need in it. And it's reversible. You can change sides with it. The only bad thing about it is it's a little bit noisy when you first get one. But after you've carried it for a little bit, used it for a few days, make a few trips with it, it gets broken in, ruffled up a little bit, and it's better. I don't like the noise to begin with. I really don't. But it's a... it's one of those risk versus reward things. I am willing to spend some non-productive time with it, or I should say non-mission essential time with it, to break it in so that it is usable and doesn't become a liability. They're designed really nicely. And the large one is one that you can carry. It's not anything that you can put a sleeping bag in and an extra jacket and all that stuff. But if you want to carry some extra food, some extra ammo, some communication equipment, first aid, space blankets, stuff like that, it's great. It has, I believe the larger one, I think, has a document carrier, time waterproof document carrier on it. And that's another thing about these 5.11 shirts is I prefer to carry the documents in my shirt. We've got the... for those of you that are familiar with the 5.11 shirts, you've got the Velcro closures behind the pocket, and that's plenty big enough for, depending on how you fold your map, of course, and quite a few, smaller documents and stuff like that. So just put it in a Ziploc bag and shove it in your shirt band. It's right there. You can yank it out and check it out, looking at it through the Ziploc bag, and put it back in and continue on your mission. So... and by the way, for those of you that like the 5.11 shirts, I've got a couple of them that are brand new, never been worn, a little bit too big for me. They're 2X, and actually quite a bit too big. Where these are kind of oversized, kind of big for a 2X. And I've got one long sleeve. If you look it up, it's the TDU. It's the one with the square tails, heavy duty, great. Great, sure. I've got one that fits me. It's a little smaller than that I wear pretty regular. Actually, I have about four of them. But so I have one of those left that is a 2X long sleeve OD green. I also just found another one that's a 2X khaki short sleeve, and both of them way too big for me. So if you're in the, I want $30 for either, or $60 for both. So they're about $44-$45 shirts or something like that. So, anyway. Okay, now the let's talk about the other deal. Let's see. I don't think I had anything else to say about the VersaPack. All right, B2 Basic, I'll hold on to you. 5.11, Yakima Glock. The other issue I was going to talk about here, a listener got a hold of me tonight and asked, said he was sleeping in his car somewhere. Aaron just dropped in there. Welcome, brother. And he's sleeping out in his car, and he's got it set up where it's pretty comfortable and can spend some time in there. And evidently, somebody who was uninformed tried to come up and get into the car while the guy was sleeping in it. Really? For this particular guy, that wasn't a great idea. So, of course, in this particular instance, he was able to display his handgun, and the guy took off. All right, well, let's talk about that a little bit. Different types of different reactions here, different responses to that. Okay, B2. So he asked me what, he said some people tell him, well, you should, you know, give him a little bit of a warning, give him the opportunity to run away. And others say, well, you just, you know, you're justified to shoot him. Those are the people that just say, oh, do I get to shoot him if I do this? Is that legal? I hate people like that. But the real answer is, are you in immediate danger? Immediate, how do you describe immediate as opposed to imminent? Well, the difference is time. Imminent means that it's damn sure going to happen. There ain't no much way around it, but it's not happening right now. Immediate means it's happening right now. So, and also, what is, if the guy is outside the car, you have a barrier between you and him. If he has a knife, or he's barehanded, he has a club, piece of pipe, something like that, you may have some time to make different decisions, take different actions. He is not immediately going to hurt you with a contact weapon. Even if the door is unlocked, you've got a little bit of time. Now, obviously, if you're sleeping in your car, I would think the door would be locked. But so now, if you got a firearm out there, that's a different story. If he's outside the car and he's got a gun and he's makes any indication that he's about to point it at you or is pointing it at you, then the time frame just changed. There is no more imminent; it is immediate. So you have to respond accordingly. Now, and think about this: if the guy does not display a firearm, and you're laying there in your shorts, and you tap on the window and show him your gun. Hang on just a second here. You tap on the window and show him your gun. Now, what would keep him from sidestepping a little bit, you know, taking a couple of steps one way or the other to his advantage and pull his gun and go ahead and shoot if he were was of a mind to? So that's something you got to be careful of. You're in a very poor position to move or to respond to that. So if you're going to do that, be prepared to follow that up with deadly force if the situation arises where you have to. So Roger, all due respect, I don't care what juries are going to do. It makes absolutely no difference. I have to be alive to worry about what the jury's going to do. That is going to have no bearing on whether or not I shoot. If he has the ability to hurt me, which with a knife outside the car, he does not, unless he compromises the barrier between us, or a club or something like that. If he has the ability, if he has the opportunity to use the ability that he has, that would go back to if he has a knife. No, he does not have the opportunity because he can't get through the barrier. If he has a firearm, probably he does. And then the next one would be for me to determine in my own mind what his intent would be, even though the intent is not you can't prove intent in court. I need to know in my mind what he is planning to do. In court, you're going to need to, as Roger is saying there, you'll need to prove to them, you'll need to convince them that you were in jeopardy, that you honestly, without a doubt, felt that your life was in danger. So those are things that you need to work on after you survive the account. And Peanut Rider's got another thing to consider. You might, and that kind of goes along with a while ago, you may not want to show the gun if he's not got a gun. Because you may, in some states, not in Arizona, but in some states, you may be charged with brandishing. And brandishing is a pretty serious charge in some states. So by showing that gun, let's just say the guy, he may have had intentions other than what he says, but when it goes to court, he may say, or if he's questioned, you know, when that night when he calls the cops and they come, he's going to say, you know, man, I just had a few beers. I just wanted to open the door and see if the guy had a cigarette. I just wanted to ask him directions. You're going to be in trouble for showing that that handgun. So be very careful about flashing a handgun around unless you really feel that you need to. Chances are you could just knock on the door, knock on the window, and say, you know, get out of here. There's somebody in here. And probably that's enough. But and have your handgun handy, but not visible. And then if the situation escalates to a point where you feel like, you know, brandishing be damned, whatever they're going to do, I feel like this guy's going to shoot me, then take the appropriate action and take care of it. So now it says, he also asks a question, what would be the appropriate distance that would constitute a barrier if you were outside of that car or outside of a room or something? And most of you know this. We've talked about it before, so we won't spend a whole lot of time on it. On the average, it's 21 feet, 7 yards. That is because it takes the average person with no training at all. If he's physically able, it takes the average person about a second and a half to cover 21 feet and inflict a fatal blow with a contact weapon. This is not counting firearms. This is contact weapons or bare hands. So it also takes the average person, maybe I shouldn't say average, a little above average, that has had some training, about a second and a half to produce a weapon from a concealed position and fire only one shot into a humanoid-sized target. So that leaves us with a tie at that point. And in this particular instance, ties suck. We don't want a tie. We want to win. Second place is first loser here. So as like Bill Jordan used to say, there is no second place winner. So you have to, the number of things you have to consider here, number one above all of them is situational awareness. Keep your head out of your poop chute. You have to pay attention to what's going on around you all the time. And that's one thing that I do not worry about with my wife. She is so aware of what's going on. She catches details all the time. She does that very well. So, and I know that, you know, you guys have heard the goat story. I'm not going to go over it again. I hate it that she was mildly injured in that attack, but I'm also thankful for it because she has experienced now a lethal force scenario that she survived. And I know in my heart, beyond a doubt, that if something were to ever happen in real life with a human assailant, that she could handle that many times better than a whole bunch of men that I know. So I'm really, really glad that it happened the way it did. And B2 Basic, I saw your little plaque there. That's outstanding. Good job on the customer service. B2 Basics is made Employee of the Month at work for outstanding customer service.
Nice.
Done a good job. Nice. So let's get back here just a second. You know, situational awareness is number one thing. Number two thing, of course, having a gun. But having the gun where it is accessible quickly. accessible, like inside that second. I tell people the average. I tell them. I tell them 2 seconds, simply because a second and a half is unachievable for a lot of people out there. If you can beat 2 seconds, you're going to be okay. They're very rarely that you're going to have to worry about a fast draw situation that you're going to be racing to the gun and have to fire that 2 shots inside of a second and a half. You might, and I encourage you to make every effort to achieve that, to reach that goal. But if you can get it to where you're at 2 seconds, you're doing okay. Tribute, I've told people time and time and time again, there's nothing in the air that's a target unless you're duck hunting. You do not shoot in the air to scare people off your property. That is a very, very poor decision. I have no doubt that the guy is going to be in trouble with the law. As a matter of fact, we have a law here in Arizona called Shannon's Law. And if you get caught firing a gun in the air anytime, anywhere, especially in a celebratory type situation, it is a felony. And there have been numerous people injured and killed by bullets falling out of the air. Don't know where they came from. So shooting a handgun or rifle, something with a single projectile up in the air, is a very poor idea. I understand now. I think that probably the apple farmer may be like so many other people. I don't know him, and I'm just guessing. But so many other people get the majority of their training and their ideas from television. There was, hey, InSpirit just joined us. Good to see you, honey. It's been quite a while. Glad you made it in here tonight. There was, what the heck, a lot of train run off the track again there. But the time involved in doing this is, you're talking about shooting in the air. There we go. Wow. I think that a lot of people see these shows on TV, and they used to be, you know, so many. It was the big thing. Everybody, every show in the world when I was a kid was shooting up in the air, you know, scaring the lions away, scaring the bad guys away, herding horses, herding cows, celebrating, doing whatever. And I think that a lot of us have probably kind of caught on to that just because of that. Of course, now your vice president said, just take your shotgun out on the balcony, out on the porch, shoot it up in the air. Yakima Glock put that in there, yeah. How stupid is your vice president? I'd say excessively. No. Susie B., Yosemite Sam fires in the air all the time. He ain't never done anything but shoot in the air, I don't think. And I think I may have told you the story before, but there was a black powder hunter, muzzleloader hunter in Ohio here a few years ago that went to unload his muzzleloader, which the only way to do that really is just shoot it, you know, fire it, but you should fire it into the ground, into a bank or something, so that you don't have to shoot it in the air. But he got back to the truck and just fired it up in the air, put the gun away, and went home. And found out the next day that he had killed a 16-year-old girl, an Amish girl, in her wagon. She was down the road about a mile away, and that bullet just came down and went right through the top of her head, killed her dead right there on the side of the road. And he knew that he had done it, and he went and he turned himself in and all that. As I remember, there's no charges filed, but it's a very stupid thing to do, and it is, whether it's criminally negligent or not, is probably up to the authorities and wherever you're at. I think it probably is. I don't think it should, you know, warrant life in prison or anything, but there probably should be some pretty serious punishment for it there. Hey, Snuff Dipper just joined us. Good deal. Glad we missed you there for quite a while, man. Yakima Glock, I know it. We already knew he was an idiot when he said that. That just absolutely removed all doubt. No doubt about it, man. All right. Well, I think we got those two things out of the way. Oh, let me go back just a minute. I got sidetracked. Let me go back real quickly on this 21-foot thing there. That 21-foot is not carved in stone. I said it was an average. It would be for the 80-year-old man in a wheelchair on oxygen, his 21 feet might be 40 feet. By the time his old mind processes the information and he's able to get to his gun and all that, he probably is not going to do it as quickly as I can, or as you know, most of you that carry guns and practice a little bit. So, yeah, and then you take somebody that practices a lot, especially for that particular situation, their 21 feet may be more like 12 or 15 feet. You may be able to buy a little bit more time or have a little bit more time if you need it, because you can get that gun out and fire two shots from concealment in 1.3 seconds or something like that. So that average, that's going to be kind of, you know, how you carry your gun. And you don't have the option of saying, well, I carry my gun differently, so you have to give me an extra half a second. That's not how it works. You need to have your gun, carry your gun in such a way that you can already do that. Those girls that just drop their gun in the bottom of their purse and expect to dig through all the checkbooks, hair brushes, and bobby pins to be able to get it out and fire and expect it to work. Now, Edge of the Woods has a good story about that, about a Glock 19 that rode around in the bottom of purse, and not his purse, actually, but the Glock 19 was covered with sticky stuff and coke and all kinds of crap, but it worked. And that's just on account of it's a Glock, but anyway, it could have just as easily been locked up somewhere, or locked up with, you know, junk in the bottom of the purse. So, anyway, let's go on here. Is it? Wow, it's past break time. So let's take a little break, and I'll be back here in 2 or 3 minutes.
Saturday morning, serials, chapters 1 through 15. Fly paper, penny loafers, Lucky Strike green. Flat tops, soft tops, Duty Baker, Pepsi please. Ah, do you remember these? Cigar bands on your hand, your daddy's socks roll down. Sticks, no plugs, and aviator caps with flaps that button down. Movie stars on Dixie Cup tops and knickers to your knees. Remember these? The Hip Parade, Great Truade, the Sadie Hawkins Dance, Pedal Pushers, Ducktail Hair, and Peg in Your Pants. Howdy Doody, Tootie Fruity, the seam up the back of her hose. Ah, do you remember those? James Dean, he was keen, Sunday movies were taboo. The senior prom, Judy's mom, rock and roll was new. Cracker Jack Price, stars in your eyes, ask daddy for the keys. Ah, do you remember these?
The boogeyman, lemonade standing, taking your tonsils out. Bend and burn and wait your turn, and four foul balls you're out. Cigarette loads and secret codes and saving lucky stars. Can you remember back that far?
To boat neck shirts and fender skirts and crinoline petticoats. Mom's word and a dirty bird and a double root beer float. Moon hug caps and loud heel taps, and he's a real gone cat. Ah, you remember that?
Dancing clothes, little moron jokes, and cooties in her hair. Captain Midnight, Ovaltine, and the whip at the county fair. Charles Atlas course, Roy Rogers horse, and only the shadow knows. Ah, do you remember catching woo. Going steady, Veronica and Betty, white bucks and blue suede shoes. Knock, knock jokes, who's there? Dewey.
Dewey who?
Dewey, remember these? Yes, we do. What do? We remember these.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Corp Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air. Don't let them kneel, but it's waiting for me.
All right, we're back. Let's finish this up here. I was just checking a couple of incoming stories here. Some of you may have already seen this. This is amazing to me. I can't even believe that this is true, but it is. I've checked on it. It comes from military.com. Apparently, the Marine Corps has about 2 weeks to, or maybe it's 2 months. Anyway, whatever. They have to make everything co-ed. They're making boot camp co-ed. They have to make every job available for females. They have to remove man from titles. There's no more rifleman. There's no more. Everything has to be gender neutral, and this I know you think this is a hoax, but it's not. It's real. It's true. Now we're starting the feminization of the Marine Corps. I don't think this is going to be received very well, to tell you the truth. I'm guessing that maybe some of these guys are going to be more than a little bit put out by having to do this. I don't know if that's your president's idea or who just exactly whose idea it is, but coming from a politically incorrect former Army guy, I would say that it was a very, very poor idea. So, anyway. Let's see. Let me get back over here. This, I love this. You know, and I told Amy today, it's no longer a joke or a way to compare things. We really are. We really are at a level of corruption in government that rivals 1938 Germany. We've gotten to a point where we can't trust hardly anybody out there. I mean, there's the Sheriff Max and the Matt Shays and those people out there that are absolutely trustworthy. But in Texas, there was a city councilman here, Marco Rodriguez, was transporting 3 illegal immigrants from the border to San Antonio when he was stopped by Border Patrol. Said he talked to the officer for a little bit and then took off again. They eventually caught up with him and found 3 illegal immigrants with him. And he admitted to being hired. This is a city councilman. This is somebody that was elected into a position in Crystal City, Texas. He said he admitted to being hired to transport them. Said he was paid $500 and $1,400 to do the same thing at least 2 other times. He was arrested, 36 years old, arrested Saturday and due in federal court Thursday, today, on human smuggling charges. Currently in the custody of the Federal Detention Center. Not only that, in this little town, this is the second Crystal City official in 2 weeks has been arrested. Last week, there's another guy who serves as a city manager, a city attorney, and city lobbyist, was arrested when he had assaulted a woman as she was going into a city council meeting. Now, that kind of reminds me of, you guys remember what we did back in, when was it, 2011? In the summer of 2011. I remember damn well, sure it was in the summer because it got up to 124 degrees. And I've got pictures of the thermometer in my truck and the one at the bank in Quartzsite, Arizona. 124 degrees. I think the bank said 124 and my pickup said 126, I believe. But nevertheless, it was warm. And we were down there because the chief of police had manhandled Jennifer Jones out there, sprained her wrist, removed her when she had the floor and was supposed to be talking, violated her Fourth Amendment rights, or First Amendment rights. And so there was a big, eventually, it took a little while, but eventually the chief of police got fired, and I don't know what they got going on down there now, but it was quite a deal. I might play that one of these days. I did a two-hour show from down there, a couple of them, actually. I may wind up playing that as a filler one of these days when I want to take a day off or something. All right, let me check and see. This is a pretty good story. We're starting to see more and more of these. I saw Amy posted one today on Facebook, and I didn't get a copy of it or get it sent to me so that I could share it with you. But it was simply another of many stories that's coming out now of sheriffs and chiefs of police and whatever that are urging people to get guns. Now, we haven't heard that too many times before now, before, you know, this is the last year or so. And certainly in the last 3 months is when we're really seeing the most of them. But here's sheriffs here in, let's see, this one, Paul J. Van Blarkum, Sheriff of Ulster County, New York. Attention licensed handgun owners, he wrote. Put this on his Facebook page. In light of recent events that have occurred in the United States and around the world, I want to encourage citizens of Ulster County who are licensed to carry a firearm to please do so. In Sullivan County, New York, Sheriff Michael Schiff. The Second Amendment and the laws of New York State give citizens the tools to defend themselves and their families from harm until law enforcement can arrive on the scene. Sheriff Chris Blair of Marion County, Florida. If you're certified to carry a gun, I would like to encourage you to do so. Sheriff Arpaio, Maricopa County, Arizona, told the media that his goal of utilizing 250,000 citizens with concealed weapons is to stop carnage and stop killing before the cops arrive. A lot of Detroiters, people in Detroit, have concealed handgun licenses. Same rules apply to terrorists as they do to any gun-toting thug. If you're a terrorist or a carjacker, you can expect to get shot. That's the chief of police, James Craig, in Detroit. Off-duty cops, Sheriff John Urquhart, I think, of Kings County, Seattle, Washington, urged his deputies to carry their guns when off-duty in case of a terrorist attack. Like, man, if you're an off-duty policeman, why would you not? I know there are some that don't. That is so absolutely, insanely ridiculous to me. If you're in that line of work, why would you not carry one? I don't know why you wouldn't anyway, you're in that line of work or not, but particularly those off-duty sheriffs and police officers can't believe the number of them that don't carry when they're off. They you know, the whistle blows at 5 o'clock and they go and hang it on the back of the bedroom door, and that's okay. I'm not a cop anymore. I won't need it until I go to work tomorrow. It's like a carpenter says about his skill saw. I won't need it, you know, until I go to work tomorrow. So, you know, there's no point really in me grabbing that. So, but this anyway, the sheriff there in I think it was Seattle that was telling his deputies, please carry when you're off duty also. So anyway, a lot of controversy over that. Of course, there's a lot of antis out there that believe that their people are stretching it a little too far. But anyway, damn them, they ain't got any say so in anything anyway. Yeah, speaking of that, let me see, I got an incoming deal. Okay. Speaking of that, in Phoenix, Arizona, they've just come up with they say that more guns equal fewer murders. And it's amazing to me that there's so many politicians and officials here and there can't look at examples like Phoenix, examples like every state that has shall issue carry laws, and see how their murders have gone down. Every state, every city in the state, they've all gone down. Even Chicago, and they want to keep fighting it, but even Chicago is going down dramatically. And this absolutely, as they say, flies in the face of everything we've been told here. But Phoenix police announced that 113 murders were committed in Phoenix in 2015, the lowest number in 30 years. Do you think that we can contribute at least some of that to constitutional carry and a very easy, lax way to get your concealed carry permit? Well, I think that has a lot to do with it. There were 113 murders in Phoenix, 2.5% reduction from 2014, the lowest raw number since 1988. City of Phoenix has 1.5 million residents, putting it sixth in size among American cities. 2015, Arizona enjoyed two different number one rankings, the best state for gun owners and the best state for criminals to get access to guns, awarded by the Brady campaign. The two work hand in hand there, if you haven't figured that out. Meanwhile, in Chicago, with a population of 2.7 million, recorded 468 murders last year. What is that? That's three, almost four times. It is four times. Almost four times as much. Chicago has a population that's not even double and had quadruple the number of murders. So, I'll be darned. Imagine that. Chicago's had more homicides than any other city in 2015. So, anyway, that's enough of that. Okay, there's a couple of issues that have come up here in Oregon that we need to talk about. Primarily, I think probably one of the biggest things right now is so much BS, so much crap, so much made-up, what's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, lies. You've heard so many things about arrest warrants and federal authorities and federal buildings and so much stuff that, I don't even know what to believe anymore. And it has caused a lot of problems, and it's caused a lot of infighting amongst patriots on Facebook and even on the ground on site. And there, of course, we know that some of the people that were there, we predicted that there would be some problems with them. Sure enough, there was. We expected it without a doubt. And some of those people have already left the scene. We've had three or four people out there that have claimed to be something that they're not. Retired Marines, retired, been there, done that, when they hadn't been anywhere or done anything. And so it's, there's infighting And this was, I don't even know. I've heard two or three different versions of, thank you, Susie B. Yeah, that might be the word I'm looking for. I've heard two or three different versions of what has happened out there. There are conflicting stories of the same event over and over, and this goes all the way to the Hammond story. It just seems like nobody really has the capacity to tell the truth in that part of the country. So, anyway, there's some things that's happening that I won't be able to tell you about until Monday, possibly tomorrow, but probably not until Monday. I can't jeopardize anything right now, but I'll have some probably some important news for you Monday over this whole stuff. And actually, there's going to be several very important things that I'll be able to share with you Monday that I wish I could talk to you about now. But anyway, we'll see if we'll see how it all pans out and what I can and can't say on Monday. But anyhow, that's about all the time I want to spend on Oregon up there. There's a story going out there saying that Ammon Bundy refused to meet with the sheriff. He refused to take the way out that was offered. He did meet with the sheriff. There's a picture of him out there shaking hands with him, talking to him. I don't know what the results were of the meeting there. But yeah, Tribute 1776, that's one of the big problems right there. That's one of at least four, maybe five big problems there. And we'll be able to talk about that a little more when, yes, D shoots, that's all I want to say about that. So, Will, I'd really like to share some more of that with you. We're not going to, unless something very significant happens, we're not going to talk about this much tomorrow night at all. For those of you that are new to the show, that are listening, or maybe in the chat room, Friday nights is our night to take a break from this. Any important stuff, we always try to get that out. But Friday night, we spend most of our time playing classic country music. We just take a break, relax a little bit, have a little fun, and I can guarantee you, if you have even a mild interest in classic country music, this will be the fastest 2 hours go by that you have ever witnessed in your life. It's amazing how fast that 2 hours goes by. So, with all that being said, tomorrow night, hopefully everything is, we're not going to change any schedule, not going to do anything any differently for my part of the show. In the last couple of weeks, has got Amy's new schedule here, where she's now on only Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And I have the option of coming on early on Wednesday and Friday if I need to talk about news. If I'm ever going to be early, I always get it out on Facebook. For those of you that follow me on Facebook, that's the best way to find out about it. I also always stick it in the, always stick it in the chat room here if I'm going to be early, so that most of the people are able to be informed and catch up with it there. So, with all that being said, I think we'll ease on out of here and head to the door. Let me check the chat room here real quick and see if there's anything in there that I need to address before I close it down here. Yeah, Partisan Gorilla, you're right about that. Yeah, I agree. It looks like everything. Mountain Man showed up here again. Glad to see you. Tribute, hope you can join us tomorrow night for Liberty Lounge. That's what I forgot to tell you. Peanut Rider, I think I told everybody about that last night. I'll say it again. Thanks for reminding me. A tremendous patriot, one of America's finest, Mike Vanderbo, has about 6 months to live. He's taking it very well. He's trying to get things straightened up for his wife, and getting a lot of projects done around the house, getting things taken care of for her. So I applaud his bravery and his ability to handle this the way he's doing it. So we'll keep you informed on that. It's going to be a sad day when we lose Mike Vanderbo. For those of you that don't know him, it was him and David Kodria that broke the Fast and Furious story back in, I believe, 2010 and maybe 2011. So anyway. All right. With all that being said, I'm going to ease on out of here. We'll see y'all tomorrow night. Thanks for joining me.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.